Ah, yeah, we love that. Welcome back here to 102.5, 106 for the game, the Chase and Big Joe Show. Happy to have you along with us. 11 o'clock, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. At 2 o'clock, Jared Stillman will take you home this afternoon. In studio now, it's always a pleasure. One of my favorite people in the world. The great, the incomparable Mr. Pete Weber. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, and how could I not be after that introduction?
It's good to see you, and it's fun to talk when a team is 8-0 in their last eight games.
Yeah.
What a great ride this has been.
Tremendous, and I'm not ready for it to end. I'll tell you, it's in Montreal tomorrow night, Thursday night, Buffalo, and then on the road for four.
It's great. Look, they got 72 points now.
Yeah.
Of course, they've won. That's 16 straight. They had 56 when this started. I was going back looking in my brain, which is not much there, about had they lost eight straight, and then we're talking like, all right, trade everybody, fire everybody, move everybody out.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, Pete. And you've seen it so long. What winning can do for a team, for players, and for a fan base.
For the fan base in particular. Because I got to tell you, Saturday night was as electric a crowd as I can remember going back to 2017, into the Cup Final that year.
So also, Montreal comes to town tomorrow night.
Right.
Sabres come in. And we've talked to Roman Yossi and a few of the guys about you only face these teams twice a year, correct, in the Eastern Conference?
Correct.
And so you don't have all that scouting tape on them. And the guys like, we'll just go out and try to play our game. And I guess what they're going to try to do tomorrow night against Montreal. How is Montreal?
Well, Montreal has had a down year, to be certain. They don't always know who's going to be in goal for them. They know that they have a lengthy injury list. I was just looking at the IRL list for them yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And that's always, I think, when a club is more dangerous, when they have guys that are getting their chance, kind of like the Predators were the last third of last season's schedule,
right,
where the youngsters come up from Milwaukee and then propel them to very near a playoff spot.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of pressure. Just go play and have
right.
fun.
House money. I say this the day after Nash Vegas casino night, right? But I talk about house money in that regard.
Did you go last night?
Oh, yeah.
How was it?
A lot of fun. A lot of fun.
I didn't. Sean Henry didn't give me my invite, so I'm going to have to talk to him off the air.
I think you should.
No, I was busy last night to do all that. So what's this? You know, we talked before we went on. This whole thing about, you know, the U2 and people who didn't even follow hockey know this story now,
yeah,
which I think is great for
tremendous.
Everybody involved.
It's absolutely tremendous. But it's greater still because of the way the team has responded since that happened. So we don't get a concert. Okay, we'll just rep off a winning streak here. Let's see what happens.
What did you think when you heard that? Because we had Greg Wyshynski on last week, and we asked Greg about, hey, would this work in the NBA or baseball or football? He said no. It's that old hockey kind of feel and vibe that you get, that it only worked in hockey.
I'm going to have to go along with that. And Greg has certainly seen enough hockey and does a tremendous. He thinks he's doing a Lou Lamoriello impression.
Right.
But what it really sounds like to me is Teddy Kennedy. So a little off. Just a little off.
Right. With all that.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, when a story can transcend and bring people like, what's this all about? I think it's good for any sport.
Absolutely. Accountability. Bring your accountability up.
Yeah.
And realize that. And the guys responded, I think, absolutely wonderfully. I didn't see any pouting and nothing like that. And I don't think Max Hurst saw any either, because he was on the games 2 through 4 of
right.
that winning streak.
Yeah, which is crazy. Pete Weber in studio with us tonight, Nashville Predators host, Montreal, and then Buffalo. You know a lot about the Buffalo Sabres.
A little bit about them, yeah. And then Montreal coming in, I've got to make a happy birthday call later on this morning to Dick Irvin, longtime voice of the Canadiens, who turns 92 today.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
But when Montreal comes, and I think it's cool, when these original six come to Nashville,
mm-hmm.
growing up here, I never thought we would see the Dallas Cowboys, Green Bay Packers, or the original six come to town. It's still very cool to see the Canadiens come to town.
Is it ever? And they, like, what did I see on their traveling list? I think 12 reporters covering the team. So we've got English and French
right.
to work with there.
Oh, that's great.
So that's what happens.
How's your French, Pete?
I'm sorry?
How's your French?
Très peu. It's not that good. But I took 3 years of it in high school, and that I remembered it because I had to get up in the morning for a 7:45 class. And if I'm doing that, by God, I'm going to study.
You're one of the few. I would have not studied. I would have not taken a 7:45 class because I saw how that ended with me when I was in college. You know, it's funny.
How did it, Joe? I need to follow up on that.
No, I'm in radio. That's how good it went. That should tell you that right there. I remember when the Preds went, it was in 2012 when they went to the second round, right? They beat the Blackhawks. They went to the second round. I remember there was a report. We were waiting at the airport for the
– Well, beat the Red Wings and then went to the next round against Arizona.
That's right. And then there was a reporter from the Toronto Daily Mail. Was that a paper?
Toronto Mail, yeah.
Okay. Came down. We were waiting for you guys to get back from the road trip.
Oh, okay.
And he said, I don't know what to write about the – he asked me, and I was like – Well, the Predators have never played hockey into the month of May.
Correct.
And that was his big story.
Yep.
And he didn't give me credit, Pete. I was mad.
He did not give
me
credit. Did he at least give you a telephone call?
He gave me nothing.
Oh, that's horrible.
Because I wrote the story. I mean, I saw the story the next day. I'm like, I wonder if he took that and wrote the story. He wrote the story about how this new hockey team is now breaking new ground because they've entered the month of May to play hockey. Now we take it for granted.
Well, we want to.
Yeah,
you got to make sure that it still works out that way. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah, to do that and all that. But I remember Toronto travels with, good Lord, I mean, so many.
Quite a few. But now they don't even travel their radio team.
Really?
They do it off a monitor like it was COVID days again, back at a studio in Toronto.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That is.
And a lot of Canadian broadcast entities are doing that. Vancouver doesn't travel radio. Calgary does not. Edmonton does, which makes them stand out. And then, is it Winnipeg? Is Winnipeg doing it? Ottawa actually traveled their radio people here last week.
Wow. I did not know. I thought everybody was traveling.
Yeah. No.
That's interesting. I remember during COVID and everybody calling the games. Something about you being there. And I know during COVID we couldn't do that. But, I mean, that's why. I mean, I listened the other night, the entire game out driving around. Then when they played, who was Thursday's game? I forget now. My mind wanders because Colorado, whoever it was Thursday they beat and listened to driving around was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
6-1 game?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was. So to do that. So radio is still a powerful, will always be a powerful force in sports broadcasting.
I sure hope so. I sure hope so. That selfishly, I sure hope so. But I got to tell you, you know, I'm in the business because as a kid, had a nice Zenith 4-tube radio on my nightstand. And I could pull in all those 50,000-watt stations that in those days were carrying the play-by-play. KMOX St. Louis, WJR Detroit, WGN and WCFL in Chicago, WCCO in Minneapolis-St. Paul, and even for AAA baseball, WBAP in Dallas-Fort Worth, so I could listen to the Dallas-Fort Worth Spurs.
Oh, nice. Sometimes late at night you can listen to 870 out of New Orleans, WWL.
Yes.
And then you could pick up Saints games and LSU football games.
And my buddy Mike Dettillier doing some of the studio work.
Yeah, which is really cool. I had friends in town a few weeks ago, and we drove by the WSM Tower in Brentwood. And they're like, what is that? And I said, you might laugh and scoff what I'm about to say, but that's one of the most important pieces of American history you're driving by right now.
The air castle of the South.
Yeah.
Right there.
Isn't that crazy? But yeah, I mean, growing up to listen, you know, for me, we were talking earlier. When I grew up in my time, in my teens, it was TBS and WGN. That was my radio because cable hit. So you had to pick the Braves or the Cubs, and I picked the Braves. And I love Dale Murphy. I love Dale Murphy this day.
I heard you talking about how devastated you were when he was traded away from Atlanta.
I'm to this day, I'm still crushed.
Yeah.
And I get it. David Justice ended up having a great career for the Braves, and they won the World Series in 95. But it just, when they traded Dale Murphy, I was just, it cut me. And I guess when you growing up, there was other guys that got traded. It wasn't as much obvious because trades didn't really, like to the 80s, they took over. But when your favorite player retired or went on, it hurt.
My favorite player growing up was a guy named Stan Musial. And when he retired at the end of the 63 season, I thought, what could happen now positively for the Cardinals? Well, that next June 15th, they got a guy from the Cubs as a throw-in, essentially, Lou Brock. And that changed things greatly in St. Louis.
Lou Brock, my goodness. Growing up here, you know, in 81, we had the Nashville Sounds at Willie McGee.
Yeah.
And how he ended up with the Cardinals from the Yankees Farm Club.
Bob Sykes, a left-hander.
Is that who they traded for him? Oh, my goodness. And then Willie McGee to do that. And it's funny. Now we go into this wormhole of baseball like that. I'll never forget who Vince Coleman got run over by the tarp, right?
Yes.
And was that the playoffs or the World Series?
Playoffs.
Playoffs. And that was against the Dodgers?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, when the, then
when that tarp just attacked Vince Coleman, rolled over him, and he was rendered ineffective for a while.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, so those were things you remember. And then the 85 World Series, and who was the umpire that blew the call? Dinkinger?
Don Dinkinger. Now, here's a story on that one.
Okay.
30 years after that, so in 2015, the Cardinals threw a reunion for that ball club. And Whitey Herzog, the Cardinals manager, decided to send an invitation to Mr. Dinkinger at his home in Iowa. And he was wondering whether he should attend or not. Well, ultimately, he decided to attend. And then Whitey called him up to the stage for a presentation. He gave him a watch with a Braille face.
And he showed up.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Oh, that to me, that could be the most egregious sports call of all time. I mean, that was pretty bad.
It certainly was for me. And years later, the guy who was covering first base, Todd Worrell, I was at the Knights of the Cauliflower Ear banquet in St. Louis in 2017.
Right.
And they called me up to introduce Todd Worrell, and I couldn't help but tell that story.
He got to tell that story. Yes. And all that. I remember it vividly from 1985 and all that, because that was something. Was it Joaquin Andujar? Was he the pitcher? What was his?
He was the next game. Andujar came in, and that's where he sort of, shall I say, lost his cool.
Yeah, had the meltdown. God, that was fun back then.
Yep.
I was looking at some of the AP when they play the World Series during the day.
Yes. Yes. And on that Royals team was one of my boyhood buddies, Jimmy Sundberg, the catcher for the Royals, who had spent much of his career at the Texas Rangers. And I was happy for Jimmy, but unhappy for my Cardinals.
Oh, my goodness. You go back so far on that. Pete Weber joined us in studio today to the top of the hour. Going that talk, a lot of things. Natural Predators, you said the other night was Saturday was as electric as you, and you've been to every game almost.
Yep.
It was as electric as you've heard that crowd?
Oh, yeah, without any question. And I think this was a case, oftentimes that crowd fuels the team. I think the team fueled the crowd. Ooh. On Saturday, the way they were playing.
Oh, nice. We had Roman Yossi on last week, and tongue-in-cheek, I asked Roman, I said, you know, sports is a business and guys come and go. And I said, there's a one guy that you just really miss that, you know, you're kind of homesick about this guy. He leaves, and he was saying that it was Shea Weber.
Yeah, I was going to say number six.
Yeah. Yeah, and he tongue-in-cheek said, we'd love to have, you know, Shea come back for the playoff push and all that stuff, and I get Shea's injured, and he's on another team and everything. But you talk about, I mean, they're so close and friends, you know, like that, and then Shea Weber leaves. It you know, these guys are human. It hurts
to
lose your buddy, right?
And we're speaking of baseball and hockey, and I still do some consultation work with Shea on his fantasy baseball teams.
You know what's funny about Shea? I tell people, it's hard to pull the hockey answer out of him,
mm-hmm.
but if you talk fantasy baseball, he won't shut up.
Right. And if you were to have seen him at the A's spring training base a number of years ago when the schedule had us out there at that time, and Shea hit a couple over the wall, that's very impressive.
Really? He's a big baseball guy.
Oh, he's huge. As a matter of fact, rehabbing from one knee surgery, he signed up for a summer wood bat baseball league in British Columbia.
Did he really?
And that's what got him back and ready.
I bet he could jack that baseball 1,000 feet.
Very much like Gordie Howe was. Gordie Howe hit several rooftop shots at Old Tiger Stadium.
Good. Did he really?
Yeah.
Probably in his 40s as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, Gordie didn't really start playing anything until he was 40 or 50 years old.
Oh, you know what's funny is that we had a guy call in a few weeks ago about, it was the anniversary of Gretzky's only appearance here.
Yes.
And now, and he had 4 or 5 assists.
5 assists.
And the Rangers that day. I'll never forget that game.
Another story I won't forget about that one. I'm going to save this guy by not giving his name out on the air. But our security guard, where the players were entering, was not going to allow Gretzky in because he didn't have his player ID card on him. So I don't know if that's what angered him to the point of having a 5-point night.
Right.
But it took a couple of years until then Peter Forsberg broke the building record with a 6-point game.
Oh, goodness. I remember talking to Mike Dunham about that game.
Yes.
And he said, you know, 1 second, there's Gretzky on your left side, then like in a flash, he's on your right side and giving the puck to somebody else and they're scoring. He said he consumed you so much that you got lost with everything else because you did not want Wayne Gretzky to score on you.
And let me just tell you, the pass I'll remember the most out of that game. Gretzky banks one off the side of the goal cage into the left circle for Kevin Stevens to bury. And, I mean, that had everybody scrambling mentally, physically, whatever.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, well, we're man, again, Wayne Gretzky coming to Nashville. He came here one time, but still the fact that Gretzky came to Nashville. Growing up here, when these guys you thought would never show up, and they get here. All right, Pete, you know, something I've heard in the last few weeks, which I haven't heard a lot about in the last couple of years, secondary scoring for the Nashville Predators. Please explain secondary scoring.
Well, the first part of the season, they depended almost entirely on the first line to do things. So Ryan O'Reilly, Gus Nyquist, and some guy named Philip Forsberg providing most of the scoring. They were hoping to get some scoring from another source. And I tell you, on that winning streak that they had, I think they've had 12 different guys score.
Wow.
So that's secondary, tertiary, quartiary, whatever you want to go.
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. And so if everybody is working hard at it, you've got a chance.
Oh, yeah. We asked Roman Josi what it's like to see these young guys score.
Yeah.
I said, you know, you see them out there, they practice with you, they grind with you, they got ups and they got downs, and see them to celebrate. And Roman's like, it's literally better than when I score. Because you know that they're working hard and they're getting the payoff there. So when you hear the captain talk about how elated he gets when these other guys are scoring, I mean, that shows what a great team this is.
And I think we saw a very good demonstration of that with the empty netter to finish out the scoring Saturday for Cody Glass's hat trick.
Right.
I mean, he had never had a two-goal game in the NHL, much less a hat trick, and does that, and the teammates maybe celebrating more than Cody. And Cody, in that post-game interview with Kara Hammer, got a little teary-eyed about it all.
Well, he should. I'm looking. He's at 5 goals in the year, and he had 3 in one game on Saturday, which is great as going on there. But, no, I mean, this is fun. I mean, 8 games to win, 8 games in a row. I know, is 10 the record?
For the Predators.
For the Predators, right.
Yeah.
10's the record. When was that?
I actually believe it was just 5-6 years ago now.
Okay.
Yeah,
because the hockey is so many streaks. You know, you win 4,
yes,
lose 4.
Yes, it does.
And I was looking, I forget what team it was.
Especially now with the 3-point games, that gets things a little bit more complicated.
Oh, absolutely. I saw Arizona the other day had lost 14 straight.
Yes. They finally broke that. They broke that spell.
Did they? And then I was looking at – I was like, Arizona lost 14 straight. And I started looking around like the NBA, like the Pistons have won 8 games this year. They're like 8-54 or something.
Yeah. They're approaching the record of what, the 1973 Philadelphia 76ers, who almost became the 6-76ers, but they actually won 9 games that year.
That would have been a great title for them. When you were out in L.A., were the Clippers there yet?
They had just moved there. I essentially moved out west with the Buffalo Braves, who became the San Diego Clippers. And did you see the story about the people, the youngsters, breaking into the Clippers' soon-to-be new building?
I have not.
In Inglewood? Yeah, they put up TikTok videos and everything. They went in and they didn't do any damage, but they broke in and shot baskets on the floor and everything.
Oh, my goodness. Where's that being built?
Next to my old place of business, the Forum in Inglewood.
So that's right next to the SoFi Stadium.
Yes, it is, right across.
Oh, out there. How was that calling games at the Forum?
Fantastic. Absolutely. Especially when I consider who was sitting in front of me many nights. There was a guy who did the Gong Show. You remember the producer of that?
Chuck Barris?
Yes. He sat right down in front of us and wore these incredible, incredible elevated platform shoes that I thought he was going to get injured when he fell off. That could have happened very, very easily for him. Meathead from...
Carl Reiner?
Yeah. Well, Rob Reiner.
Sorry.
Yeah, Rob Reiner from All in the Family. He was there frequently. And then a guy named Ed Asner, as we know as Lou Grant.
Goodness. Were you there when Gretzky got traded?
No. I was gone from there in 81, and Gretzky was traded there in 88.
Okay. All right. Was that how monumental was that for the game of hockey?
There's no team here if that hadn't happened.
Wow.
That's what made hockey in the Sun Belt possible, I think. And then shortly thereafter, that's when the Ducks came in, splitting up the Southern California marketplace. But without Wayne Gretzky going there and the actual interest he attracted, his mere presence attracted, I don't think Nashville's in the league. I don't think Tampa. I don't think Florida. I don't think Dallas.
I was looking at Gretzky. They were talking about his stats. I mean, they're never going to be even halfway there, probably. I mean, it's amazing what he did for the game of hockey.
Well, Ovechkin is close to it, but one of the records that Wayne Gretzky has held is the record for most records. He had 61 records in the book with his name on them.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and there's other things you think, but you look at some of the stuff he's done, and nobody's even close to that.
No.
But I always
subtract his goals, and he's still the leading scorer.
That's amazing. We have this is always a fun June topic about the one record that on sports record never be broken. I'm adamant the 56 game hit streak will never. Nobody will get to 40. I don't think, and very few have.
And but Pete Rose got to what 44,
and he got a gimme at the Braves one night on a bunt, which they gave him a hit, and it should have been a fielder's choice.
Well, there and then I think the record though was a hockey record, and consecutive games. You talk with Joe DiMaggio. Let's go with this one for a goaltender playing 502 consecutive games. That one is not going to be broken. Glenn Hall did that with the Chicago Blackhawks.
That would mean today you'd have to play six full seasons at least.
Yeah.
Because that's 82 games, six times eight, 48. So my math adds up. So, yeah, there's no way.
And he did it in the era where they did not wear a mask.
I don't know. Why did not wear a mask? I mean, what? And finally, one day somebody woke up and said, hey, we need to put a mask on the goalie.
Because they weren't lifting the puck that much in the earlier days. So the shots weren't getting up around the eyes, around the face.
Oh, okay.
But take a look. There's a picture, if you can find it on Google, of Terry Sawchuk and his face with all the stitches in it. And it's kind of scary.
Another thing which really, I know we got to wrap the show here in a second, but when the goalpost NFL was in the end zone, and then finally said, let's put it back on the back part of the end zone. I remember listening to Lynn Dawson's like, yeah, we'd run pick plays with the goalpost.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And then even before they had the single support for the goalpost. Then it was even more dangerous prior when they had the two posts there in the ground.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Pete Weber with us. Pete, thank you for this. Always love seeing you.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.